Looking for a new sports show?
So my wife and I go to the movies because you have to go opening weekend.
Yeah, I was with my boy, so he got us right up to the front of the line of this new club.
So I'm stuck watching my sister's dog again. He's throwing up all night.
2.5 games back in the standings, I feel like the Mets are one big bat away from competing. Imagine that. A sports show that's about sports. The Joe Fan Show. Are you fan enough?
Welcome to the Joe Fan Show with your host, Clayton Hamilton.
Greetings, sports fans. My name is Clayton Hamilton, and you're listening to the Joe Fan Show, coming to you live from fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada, the greatest city in the world. Right here on the home of Vegas sports, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Let's check the headlines. German sprinter Marcel Kittel wins stage 11 of the Tour de France on the streets of Po. It was his fifth stage victory of the Tour and the 14th of his career. Chris Froome still leads the overall classification as the race heads into the Pyrenees tomorrow. The Derek Jeter-Bruce Sherman bid to buy the Marlins has received a boost. Michael Jordan will join the proposed ownership group. Two other groups are in the running, including Miami businessman Jorge Mas and a group headed by Jeb Bush, Tag Romney, and Wayne Rothbaum. And the NBA Board of Governors has voted to decrease the number of timeouts per game from 18 to 14 and will limit the number that can be called in the final 2 minutes from 3 down to 2. Today we have Matt Reed, Aaron Thorne, and Jeff Klein. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. Are you fan enough?
So let's get loud and let's get proud. We got a game to play. Game on. Let's play ball. There won't be a better time to give it our all. Stand tall. Let's get it on. I know you hear that crowd. They're about to get loud. It's game on.
The Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Petrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvaprc.com and take the first step toward a feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, joined in studio by the WNBA baller herself, 5 feet, 10 inches of sunshine. Right here, Aaron Thorne. Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you much.
Good to have you. And a big, hearty welcome back to our good buddy in Oakland, California, Matt Reed. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, Clayton. Good to be here, bud.
Good to talk to you, Matt. I don't think I've talked to you in 3 or 4 weeks. How's things by the bay?
Ah, fantastic. I was up in Tahoe. Spent a couple weeks up there enjoying the sunshine. Just missed the big celeb golf tournament, but other than that, things are going well.
Excellent. As you know, Matt, big week in Major League Baseball with the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game. So we're going to go out to Los Angeles, California, bring in our baseball guy, Jeff Klein. Welcome, Jeff.
What's up, guys? Hey, Clayton, Matt, Aaron.
Good to talk to you. Jeff, I know before we get diving into baseball that you, like me, have been getting up about 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning to catch things from Wimbledon. Huge day on the grass. Novak Djokovic gone. Andy Murray gone. Sam Querrey, the first American in the semifinal of a Grand Slam since Andy Roddick in 2009.
Yeah, how great is that? Sam Querrey finally advances, and the U.S. men's team has really languished for a while, and I think that's been a lot of the buzz, is the lackluster effort by the men over the years, so it's so great to see Querrey advance.
Now, Sam Querrey going to play Marin Cilic. Aaron, we got the ladies' semifinals tomorrow. Are you much of a tennis girl?
I do like watching. I don't watch the whole tournaments, I'm going to be honest. It's like baseball for me. I usually just watch when they get down to the series.
Yeah, as
stuff.
They start to pan out. I know that, yeah. Matt loves himself some Australian Open because he likes to stay up all night, right?
All these tournaments. I can't wait till the U.S. Open starts when we can watch tennis at normal hours, right?
Yeah, exactly. And where they have a tiebreak for the fifth set, you don't have to have the marathon like you did with Mueller and Nadal the other day, where Nadal just runs out of gas.
It is kind of fun, though, I mean, just to see, yeah, who's going to break first, because it could go on forever.
Yeah, all of the tournaments. No tiebreak in the fifth set except for the U.S. Open. Jeff, I want to talk a little baseball. Home Run Derby on Monday, All-Star Game from last night. Your impressions?
I thought it was a fantastic All-Star game. And, you know, I just thought it was ironic, the all this talk about how we need offense in the game and push for more offense, and here's an All-Star game that goes 2-1 in the 10th inning. And I think it was riveting and fantastic and nice to see good pitching in a season that really hasn't featured as good pitching as we've been used to in the past, and some great defensive plays.
So, Aaron, two home runs, 22 strikeouts. The old commercial says, chicks dig the long ball. I have to audible to you on this to answer the question. Is that home run or strikeout? Which is the way to go?
See, I'm a purist, so I'm probably different than most girls, but I like games that are pure to what they are. So the great pitching is brilliant to me. Mm-hmm. Just appreciating all aspects of the game, and these pitchers made it hard, and it was fun to watch.
Yeah, it certainly was. I like the All-Star game. I know you're not a huge All-Star game guy in all of sports, but baseball a little bit different than the NHL, NFL, NBA.
Yeah, baseball definitely, because these guys are out there playing hard the whole time. You know, it's not like basketball where there's no defense being played, or football where, you know, they're going so hard at each other all throughout the season. They're not going to do it in a meaningless game, but. Yeah, the baseball game, I mean, everyone's going after it. Everyone's playing hard. I actually liked a couple of the on-field interviews during the game. I thought the Bryce Harper interview, I don't know if you guys caught any of that, was pretty cool, too. So it kind of gave a different feel to it. But everyone was out there playing hard. I mean, there were some pressure situations. We saw Kenley Jansen come up with, you know, three big strikeouts in the top of the ninth. And, yeah, I mean, it was a good game. Yeah, if you're not an everyday fan, you're going to want to see some more offense than what we saw. But if you're a baseball fan, it was a great game.
The All-Star game, Jeff, is a time that baseball sort of collects itself, sees where it is. The commissioner, very accessible during All-Star week, had his little symposium that he does every year, sort of the state of the game. He talked about the possibility of expansion being down the road. He mentioned three cities, Montreal, Charlotte, and Mexico City, as places that he would want to expand. But he said, don't get too excited. We need to fix our stadium problems in Tampa and Oakland first. What were your initial thoughts when you heard about the commissioner talking expansion?
Well, my initial thoughts were, I'm glad he's got his priorities straight. I don't think the game is in need of necessarily more teams. I always worry about kind of spreading the talent out and watering the game down from that standpoint. But that said, I agree. The stadium deals and deciding what to do with Tampa and Oakland and what, you know, baseball, it'd be great to keep baseball in those cities, and figuring out how to do that is the priority. I think after that, you can look at some of these new cities. The one thing I'll add about adding more teams, which, as I mentioned, I think spreads out the talent, is that there are a lot more young players coming into the game today that are game ready. We're making a big impact, obviously, this year. A lot of talk with Aaron Judge and Cody Bellinger, you know, the two highlights. But we're seeing that more and more. So, you know, maybe there is a lot more young talent that could be injected into the game right away. But I agree with him. The priority is the stadiums and existing.
Yeah, the stadium issue's always been a problem there in Oakland, Matt. The old Oakland Alameda County Coliseum, one of the worst facilities in baseball. And it's not just that the sight lines are bad or you're far away, but there are structural problems. There are plumbing problems within the stadium. It really is a bad facility, unlike Tampa, which people just don't like the location, but the stadium itself is fine. What's the latest happening up there with the stadium initiative?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard a whole lot. I don't think there's really a big push right now, especially with the Raiders being, you know, it was one thing if the Raiders are going to stick around, but with the Raiders getting out of town, I mean, yeah, the A's are my last show, but I don't think anyone really is that interested. I mean, if you look at that, yeah, the stadium is awful, and I know there's a lot of diehard A fans up here, but if you watch any Oakland game, that stadium is not even half full. So, you know, I know San Jose's chomping at the bit to get a hold of the A's. I know there's a lot of other places that are looking to get a hold of the A's. And it's going to be crazy. I've been here in Oakland for 5 years. There were three professional sports teams, and in the next 2 years, there could be zero teams in Oakland.
See, and that's a crazy thing to me is once you hear of the Raiders moving, why would the community itself not get more involved? Why would the people in charge of the city get involved and say, hey, we don't want to lose another team? You know, we're going to be down to the Warriors, who are great, but...
And leaving to San Francisco.
Yeah.
So they're,
yeah.
I mean, they're going
across the bay.
Going across the bay. Matt, or Jeff, you're entrenched in local politics. Why are things like this so difficult to see come to fruition?
I mean, I think the problem is that nowadays everyone wants the city to pony up the money or pass a bond or something passed off to the taxpayers. And the leagues don't want to pay for the stadium's owners think that they can get away with not paying for stadiums by, you know, going to public funds. And there are some cities, and Oakland's one of those, Los Angeles for the longest time didn't get an NFL team because of this reason, where some cities don't want to pay up that money. They have other priorities, which I agree with. Stadium's pretty far down the list. So, there's a lot of, details down in the weeds as far as city politics, city funding, and spending priorities. But, that has a lot to do with it.
One of the organizations not afraid to spend money, Jeff, is Major League Baseball. They are sinking a tremendous amount of money into the Major League Baseball Play Initiative, and they're partnering with 160 minor league cities and the U.S. Conference of Mayors to try to generate youth interest in baseball. And the narrative, and you know how I feel about national narratives, Jeff, that I think they're really perpetuated by a bunch of lazy sports show talk hosts who don't have the willingness or the foresight or the intelligence or the understanding to actually research a problem, that keep saying that baseball is dead and baseball is dying, and it's simply because they're too lazy to cover it and they don't want to have to think about it between opening day and the World Series. But television ratings are up, participation is up, and yet they keep saying baseball is dying. Why are all of these sports talk show hosts wrong?
You know, it's an interesting point, and I'm glad you brought up how the ratings are up. I think offense is up, right? There's been a lot of talk this year about home run rates up. Is this a new era of home runs? Just to give you an example, in June, there was 2.7 home runs hit per game. At the height of the juiced era in May 2000, there was 2.64. So we're exceeding home run totals hit during, what people consider the steroid era. And so I thought about, how do we have this narrative persist? And I think baseball lends itself less to a lot of the glitz or, Twitter stories, catchy stories that get, go around the Twitter or the internet, they're viral. And I think basketball and football really kind of lend themselves more towards those narratives. For baseball, it's more about following the sport, following day-to-day action and so forth. And for national shows that really try to attract an audience with catchy stories and glitzy stories, I think maybe that's not as an attractive sport for them.
Yeah, baseball, Matt, it is up 18.1% and 12.4% just in terms of people that participate in some form of baseball or softball, like beer leagues, rec leagues. Over 10.25 million people that play baseball or softball. It's the most participated sport in the country. And like I said, the ratings last night, it was number two on Saturday night, a regular season game, Royals at Dodgers on Fox. It was only beaten by Dateline on Saturday night. So it was carrying a national audience.
Yeah, as well it should. I mean, the game's in a good spot right now. There are a lot of stars. And, compared to other sports where we're starting to see a lot of super teams, baseball, it's wide open. I mean, you're looking top to bottom in each league, and everyone, I mean, the majority, everyone's still alive for a playoff spot. So fans are going to stay interested. There's a lot of big stars out there, a lot of big names right now on pretty much every team. So it keeps everyone involved, and it's healthy right now, and which is great because, there was that big drop-off after the strike, and then after, the juiced era, people kind of shied away. But I think baseball's back in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the people like Aaron Judge and Cody Bellinger, like we talked about earlier, and you're getting the revival through these young players. So you feel like it's going to stick around for a while. Mm-hmm. People are going to start to grasp hold of these players and you know, that's my favorite player, and they're going to continue. These guys are 24, 25 years old. They got a long – Bryce Harper has been in the league for 5 years. He's 24 years old. These guys are going to be around for a long time, so it bodes well for the league.
Yeah, I really like what something that Bryce Harper said last night when he was talking about, you know, who's the face of baseball, and he said, I think there's 20 faces, Jeff, and I thought that maybe that's the way to go because the NBA is sort of the same way. You do have, you know, LeBron James as maybe your face, but there's also Kevin Durant, and there's Steph Curry, and there's James Harden, and there's Russell Westbrook, and there's Boogie Cousins, and there's Anthony Davis, and there's – Derrick Rose, and there's Jimmy Butler, and you just keep going, Gordon Hayward.
Yeah.
You just keep going on and on. A team, Jeff, real quick before we head off to break, that is full of young stars. Domingo Santana, one of them, as well as a pretty interesting pitching staff. The Milwaukee Brewers, they're a team that we've liked a little bit more than the rest of the nation has. Are they going to stick around? Are they going to make moves in order to be competitive the rest of the year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're in first right now, and that's probably more to do with the Cubs just aren't really living up to expectations, and that NL Central has been pretty mediocre and surprising a lot of people. They are interested in making a move. What they're looking for are arms that are controllable. So they've been linked to pitchers such as Sonny Gray, Jose Quintana. They have a lot of prospects in their system. They have one of the best farm systems in baseball right now. So they could move a couple of those guys and still not really affect their building process, especially if they get a long-term arm bat that can really help them in the future. Because, you know, while I like Jimmy Nelson, he's a fine pitcher, he's not really a guy you necessarily want to count on to be your horse going into the postseason. So I think they're going to look to make some strategic moves that help them this year and probably in the next few years as well.
All right. Well, thank you, Jeff. We look forward over the next couple of weeks leading into the trade deadline. We're going to get back with you next week and talk about the teams that are starting to make moves and maybe ones that should. You're listening to the Joe Fan Show right here on NBC Sports Radio 920, The Game.
The Joe Fan Scoreboard is brought to you by Kazoom Adventures. For outdoor hikes that can win you money, visit radio.gokazoom.com for exclusive pictures and video clues. Get outdoors, find flags, play Kazoom, the hottest new game in Vegas. radio.gokazoom.com.
Finals from earlier at Wimbledon, Sam Querrey knocks off defending champion Andy Murray in 5 sets. Querrey becomes the first American man to reach a Grand Slam semifinal since Andy Roddick in 2009. He will face Marin Cilic, who disposed of Gilles Mueller in 5 sets. On the other side of the draw, Roger Federer defeated Milos Raonic in straight sets, while Novak Djokovic retired from his match with Thomas Burdick due to an elbow injury. Gold Cup action underway tonight at 3:30 with Panama taking on Nicaragua, and Team USA is in action at 6 o'clock against Martinique, and that is a look at your Joe Fan Scoreboard. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas along with Aaron Thorne and Matt Reed out in Oakland, California. Welcome back. Got a little NFL news that has popped up over recent days, Matt and Aaron, and that's has to do with guaranteed contracts. So, Matt, you're up there in the Bay Area. You saw two pretty massive deals. One for Derek Carr became the highest paid player in the NFL, and then you saw Steph Curry over on the NBA side become the highest paid NBA player, at least for a couple of days. A lot of NFL guys are chirping that Tim Hardaway Jr. makes more than Derek Carr.
And it's true. I mean, that's what it comes down to is that, yeah, a lot of these guys on the NFL rosters are not making nearly as much money as the other major sports. And when you look at basketball, you're talking about a, you know, 12-man, 15-man roster. So obviously the money is going to be a little different there. Same with baseball. They're paying 25. As with football, you have 50-plus players that you got to pay. But the big stars should be making, you know, something comparable, I think, to especially with the injury risk. And I think that's what it comes down to, right? From both sides, you can see it. The owners, there's a huge risk to give that much guaranteed money to a player in a sport where really on each play there's a chance, you know, they're out for the year, out for their career. But on the player side, you're putting up that, you know, you're putting up all the risk. You should be rewarded. So it's tough. You can see points on both sides.
Matt, are you telling me that that NFL owners want to make as much money as possible and that players want to make as much money as possible and they want you and I to pay for it with merchandise and ticket sales and concessions?
It's crazy, right?
It is, right?
Yeah. It's, yeah, who would ever think of such a thing?
Yeah, it's it has gotten a little out of hand. But the thing that's odd, Aaron, is that there's not a consensus even among the players on the player's side about guaranteed contracts. And there have been several players that have come out and said that guaranteed contracts in the NFL don't work. And it's because guys will sort of sit out or they'll have a nicked leg or a knee and they're like, nah, well, why take the beating? Let me just take my check for 4 or 5 or 6 weeks. Do you see that, being a former athlete yourself, as something that you would see in a locker room?
You'd like to say not, but, I mean, look at the NBA. You got guys sitting out and resting all the time. I mean, the Spurs are famous for it. The Cavs have started to do it with LeBron. The second the tiniest little thing starts, they sit out for weeks at a time or a day or two, whatever it is. They're taking advantage of the situation. You'd like to say these guys are going to compete and they want to be out there on the field, but you start guaranteeing those contracts and where they don't actually have to go out there and earn it, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know, Matt. I don't really know what the solution is for this, because it seems like there's a lot of ways to sort of get around the problem of guaranteed contracts. But with the way that they've structured the salary cap, the way that they've structured, you know, what is guaranteed, you know, for the first 20 picks or so in rookie deals, all of those guys' money is guaranteed for the first, you know, 4 years. But it's not, you're not talking about a significant payday in comparison to what other athletes are making. In comparison to what you and I are making, absolutely. It's, you know, we have to get a rookie guaranteed contract, and you and I are probably smart enough to live the rest of our life on it, you know, but we don't also have 4 Hummers and 9 girlfriends, so we don't run into that issue. But how do you get around it? How do you create a system where you can manipulate money as to what you get to keep versus what's a part of the salary cap? What are the solutions?
Well, I think incentives and bonuses is one way to get around it. I think you see guys like Tom Brady. You know, Brady takes less money guaranteed or less money in his contract to get other players there, but he makes up for it with playoff bonuses and you know, whatever incentives that they add in. I mean, that's really only the only way I see getting around it, because, like you said, I mean, there's just owners want to make money, players want to make money, and there's really no in between. And the NFL is kind of at a crossroads right now, because the advertising dollars are down this year, and you know, they lost two major sponsors in Viagra and Cialis, which was putting a lot of money in their pockets, and now they're struggling to find that. So they want to even keep more money now, and I don't know if this is going to get, you know, what are we looking at? 2021 would be the next strike season. We don't want to get there.
You don't want to take a shot at the NFL one last chance as a replacement man in 2021.
My only chance would have been as one of those replacement referees, and we saw how well they did.
Exactly. That did not go well. One of the things that folks have talked about is they said guaranteed contracts would create shorter contracts, Matt. But I wonder, is that really a bad thing? Like, is it really a bad thing to have sort of a higher priced shorter contract? Because if a guy signs a 7-year deal and he gets hurt anyway, he's going to be out after two. So what's the difference between a 2-year contract and a 7-year contract? Like, why not take a little bit more money, the shorter deal, and then if you're still good, then renegotiate and be able to make more money?
Yeah, I mean, they all want to renegotiate their contracts anyway, right? We see guys sitting out, holding out all the time, you know, when they have a contract. So I think it makes a lot of sense shorten those contracts. You know, what else could make sense is get rid of the salary cap. In baseball, there's no salary cap. And, you know, if you really want to, you know, see what guys are really worth and what guys are going to get paid, or up the salary cap one way or the other. I know they want to keep some parity in the league, but let's see what guys are really worth and what owners are really willing to pay, because there's a lot of rich owners out there.
Another thing, maybe a solution, Aaron, and I know the owners don't want to do it because they don't want to add payroll, but even when you think about it, it's so weird to me that because most of the guys they're going to add are going to be at league minimum anyway. And you're right. talking about, you know, $19 billion industry, and then they're crying over, you know, $600,000. But why not expand rosters? Like, why does the rosters keep getting cut? You know, now there was 55 and now it's 53. And why don't you have more flexibility like you do in baseball with the disabled list to be able to run players in and out to take care of these injuries?
While it makes sense for the injury purpose, it doesn't make sense for their salary issues, though. The more people you add, the lower these salaries go. So It's a tough battle one way or the other. You know, you add people, you might lose some money. But honestly, I like football, the way they do the incentive-based stuff. I wish more sports would do it that way. And the hard thing about doing no salary cap is exactly what you said, Matt. It's you end up with the Cowboys being awesome and the Patriots being awesome and everybody else being mediocre. And we saw how great that was for the NBA Finals. I mean, that wasn't that fun to watch, let's be honest.
Right, and it's such a different sport, too, than baseball, where you sort of can get away with that, where the small market teams have been just as successful as the large market team. So it's something to keep the eye on, but I'm like you, Matt. I think a strike 2021 might be pretty detrimental because, you know, participation is down a little bit, and it's interest in advertising dollars are down a little bit, and they've kind of priced themselves a little bit out of the market. So we'll see if this is the beginning of the end for the mighty NFL, or if they will find a way to reinvent themselves. When we come back, the league that's having absolutely no problem putting butts in seats and making money through television and ad rates, that's the NBA. Aaron, Matt, and I are going to dissect Summer League when we come back. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920 The Game. The Joe Fan Show is brought to you by the Las Vegas Pain Relief Center, with locations in both Henderson and on the West Side. Dr. John Patrick and his dedicated staff are committed to helping you lead a pain-free life. Visit them at lvprc.com and take the first step toward feeling great. Clayton Hamilton here in Las Vegas, along with Aaron Thorne in studio, Matt Reed out in Oakland, California. And Matt!
Yes, sir.
Guess where I will be this weekend?
Las Vegas.
I will be in the tee box at Spanish Trail, playing with our good friends at Heroes in the Rough. Another great golf course, another great outing. Get to hang out with these guys. I'll play a pretty good round of golf. I got to get you out here for one of these events.
I know, absolutely. I hear from you every time about how great they are, and I mean, it sounds awesome. So I can't wait to get out there.
Yeah, next time we fire up TPC Summerlin, I think we gotta get you out here for that. You much of a golfer, Aaron?
I used to. I haven't in a long time, but I got a wicked shank. So
yeah. Are you more of a mini golf?
I am pretty good at mini golf.
I have to say, the one Las Vegas has everything, but what they do not have are world class mini golf courses, which I've never understood that. No. How is there not a world-class mini golf course on the Strip?
Lame sauce.
There's plenty of them in Myrtle Beach. I tell you what, Matt, have you ever been to Myrtle Beach? Myrtle Beach is the greatest place to go when you're like 9 to 14 years old.
No, I haven't. I wish I had, but I think you're onto an idea there with this mini golf in Las Vegas.
I'm an idea factory, Matt. Idea factory. Somebody had an idea this week, Aaron.
Yeah.
They had an idea, uh-huh. And they chose to share that idea with the media.
Awesome.
And
always
that,
smart.
That is one Fred Hoiberg, who there were rumors, multiple rumors, when the Ohio State job opened up that perhaps Fred Hoiberg had been disenchanted by his experience with the Chicago Bulls and may be ready to go back to Ohio State. Opted for the coach out of Butler, so it didn't get that far. But Fred Hoiberg said that he effing hated college recruiting.
Yeah.
And that he doesn't ever want to do it again, and he likes the NBA because all he has to do is coach. He doesn't have to worry about the other nonsense. With a team as in flux as the Chicago Bulls and his job status as tenuous as it is this a smart move for Fred Hoiberg to burn the entire college bridge?
Yeah, no. He just dug himself a grave on that one. I don't see how you're a university that goes, yeah, let's bring in the guy that said he hated recruiting because we'll be awesome. No, I mean... And again, Chicago Bulls are a hot mess right now. So the timing of the statement on top of just the stupidity of it overall is awesome.
Yeah, because Matt, he could be gone from Chicago right quickly. And is he the kind of guy that has done enough to be an NBA coach for the rest of his career?
No, absolutely not. He'll be gone from Chicago probably after this season. Maybe they give him one more, and he'll be an analyst. He'll be in the studio somewhere because he won't be coaching anymore. Period.
Yeah, they are. Oh, what a disaster!
Yeah,
the Bulls are. Are we gonna see Dwayne Wade? Is he gonna play?
You know what? I don't know. I mean, if they offer him a buyout, let's be honest, he's going to take it.
Right. $24 million, so that's a lot of money. That's like, how many movies would Gabrielle Union, his wife, have to do to make $24 million, Matt? Is that like six movies for her?
That's like 24.
Yeah, probably, right?
Yeah.
So she's not going to let him just, you know, walk away. They're going to get paid.
He's not stupid. He wasn't going to get 24 from anybody else,
right. That's the world's easiest opt-in.
The best part of his buyout's like 19, though. I mean, that's just insane.
Which is why I'm saying if they do it, he's going to take it in 2 seconds and then walk to another team. And even if they only pay him the mid-level, he's still almost making the exact same amount of money.
Right. That, and some cornerback and some free safety in the NFL is going to have to play 6 years in order to get that $24 million. Guys with million-dollar dreams just down the road at the Thomas & Mack Cox Pavilion for the Summer League. Aaron, who has made a name for themselves this summer?
The interesting thing to me is Gordon Hayward signs with the Celtics, and then all of a sudden this kid, Jason Tatum, comes out and shows everybody, you didn't need to. Mm-hmm. I'm right here. I mean, it's going to be interesting to find time for both of these guys now. I mean, I guess you could play Tatum at the small forward. I don't know. I mean, he's been great. The other guy that's been good, Donovan Mitchell, surprise of the Utah Jazz with his little 37-point outing, highest score so far in the league. Lonzo Ball had a rough first one. I witnessed that. I just think the expectations of the L.A. fans are he's never going to be able to live up to it.
Mm-hmm.
But he did recover with a triple-double, which was nice to see.
But it was a baby triple-double.
And he got that fast-break dunk at the very end.
Yeah,
I'm a
firm believer that you should have to score 20 points to have the points portion of the triple-double. But back to Jason Tatum, Gordon Hayward, Matt. Can they exist on this floor at the same time? Can they provide a dynamic offensive front so that a guy like Isaiah Thomas, who said, you're all going to have to back up the Brinks truck next year, that they can say, fare thee well, and go younger at the point guard position and save a little coin?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to find a way to make those guys coexist out there because Tatum's look like a stud. I mean, it's only summer league. Let's not get too carried away, but he's looked great. Hayward's flexible. He could play the three. You could put him a shooting guard a little bit. You could put Tatum at the four, like Aaron was saying. I mean, they're going to find ways to get these guys out there on the floor together because, I mean, they're too good. And you know, my favorite guy from that team, Jaylen Brown, I mean, where's he going to play now? I mean, they got to find room for him too. So I think it's a good thing, as we've seen with teams like the Warriors, where you have a bench that you can rely on, and it looks like, you know, Boston's going to have a few guys on the bench that they can rely on. And, it's never a problem, I think, having too many good guys. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, I think what the key will be, Aaron, and probably, you know, maybe you can speak to this, about what the goals of training camp and preseason are for the Celtics is really going to be to try and figure out a rotation.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, it's never a problem to have some wealth on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And at a price of a rookie contract will be great for them. We always go back to you got to beat the juggernauts. You got to be able to beat the Golden States and now the Houston Rockets and the Cleveland Cavs. So this is boding very well, I think, for Boston.
Yeah. Two guys that stood out to me, Matt, we'll see if you have any impressions on these guys because they were pretty much unheralded but have stepped forward and said, hey, take a look at me. One is Brian Forbes for the San Antonio Spurs. 29.3 points in a little over 30 minutes, shooting 44.1% from the floor. He is penciled in should Manu Ginobili either walk away or decrease his minutes significantly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's looked great. That's one of the guys I was thinking, too, is that
you know, coming out of Michigan State, you know, there are questions about you know, what he was going to be able to give you kind of off the dribble, what his skill set was. But, you know, he's developed into a guy that's, you know, not only just a role player, but, yeah, like you said, could step in and give them really good minutes this year. And we've seen this summer league. He has no problem putting the ball in the basket. So I think, he's got to look at. One guy for me, too, Clayton, if we're talking about, some second-year guys, Patrick McCaw for the Warriors. I mean, we're talking about a UNLV guy that, you know, the rich get richer, and we saw McCaw play some actual meaningful minutes in the finals last year, and how much better is he going to be next year, too? And, I mean, it's a bright future for him and for the Warriors, obviously.
It's funny that we're talking about these summer league teams, and we're talking about the Celtics and the Warriors and the Rockets. I mean, you look, really? They got to get more
people. They got to get better in these places.
The Spurs got to get better. Awesome. I mean, we're talking about, again, these same teams just getting better. We're talking about summer league. Yeah, the competition isn't the same, but these guys are standing out, and that says something.
And when you look at some of the sort of free agent and trade moves that have happened, Matt, we sort of wondered what Toronto was going to be. And we talked a lot during the season about, was the window closing on Toronto? A little bit mixed reviews. They tried to make some moves last year, albeit, you know, Damari Carroll and Jarrett Sullinger, which they turned out to not be difference makers as we sort of had projected. They do get rid of Damari Carroll in his $14.8 million contract. They're going to ship him out of town. They also put Corey Joseph in a trade to Indiana and are going to get C.J. Miles, re-signed Kyle Lowry, who everybody thought was going to be out of town. Are the Raptors better now than they were 2 months ago?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think they're the same. I think those moves are kind of lateral moves. You know, they re-signed Ibaka, which is nice for, you know, for the front court there. But, you know, Lowry and DeRozan, we've seen how far they've been able to take them the last couple of years, which, you know, there's no knock on them. They've done a great job, but it's not enough in the East right now. It'd definitely not be enough in the West. So, yeah, I mean, they're still a big piece away. How they're going to get that piece, I don't know. I don't see anyone else on their roster really right now that can project to be that kind of big piece they need. I did like the way Powell played last year. Maybe if he takes a step up and improves that, you know, he helps them to stay a contender in the East. But, yeah, it's a tough road to hoe for Toronto right now. And, you know, with Boston getting better, with Washington hopefully still being good, and with, you know, Cleveland still at the top.
Yeah, I don't know how much it changes things. I think losing Corey Joseph is not the greatest. I mean, he was a great backup, especially since Kyle Lowry wasn't healthy all year. I do like the C.J. Miles instead of Damari Carroll, but is it enough to take them any further than they are? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's... They just feel like an also-ran, and it's going to come down to Cleveland. It's going to come down to Boston. There is another team, though. They're out there in the West, Matt, real close to you, that, you know what, even if they're not successful, at least they're trying. Sacramento Kings bringing in George Hill, Zach Randolph, Vince Carter, three veterans to go with their four draft picks of De'Aaron Fox, Harry Giles, Justin Jackson, and Frank Mason III in order to join Buddy Hield, a holdover, and Costa Kufis, the best 4-5 bench guy in the league.
Yeah, Sack. They're near the bottom of the West again, which, you know, I mean, there's not much you can do in the West with some of the teams that we do have out here. But like you said, they're trying, and I think that they added some great young talent. I think if you look at the draft, they had a really nice draft. Bringing in, you know, Zebo as a veteran presence, you know, as a down low guy that can kind of help, you know, develop some of those younger guys. I like Vince Carter. I mean, he still has a little bit left. George Hill was interesting because I thought, you know, he had a lot of options to go places to compete or to at least compete for a championship, and he ends up choosing Sacramento when, you know, first pick with, you know,
De'Aaron Fox, it just seems like a weird fit. I don't know, maybe George Hill plays off the ball. He can play a little too, but then you got Buddy Hield there. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking, I mean, George Hill plays 34 games a year anyway, so it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be pretty interesting to see just how this team comes together. When we come back, take a little quick look at the Pelicans and then some Q&A on the docket. This is the Joe Fan Show, NBC Sports Radio 920, The Game. Welcome back to the Joe Fan Show. Clayton Hamilton here along with Aaron Thorne in studio. Matt Reed out in Oakland, California. Matt, before the break there, we were talking about Sacramento. They made an attempt to get better. Another team sort of in a similar situation, the New Orleans Pelicans, they did not make any attempts to get better. They have Boogie in the Brow brought back Jrue Holiday, but the big elephant on the court was the rest of the scoring has to come from Solomon Hill and Etuan Moore. They're still out there. That's where they need an upgrade, have done nothing.
Yeah, it's a shame, too. When we're talking Boogie and Brow, I mean, those are two of the best bigs in the game, so I think if they could put anything around them that they'd at least be able to compete. But, you know, Jrue Holiday I like. But other than that, like you said, yeah, nothing. I did see one rumor, though, that Etuan Moore and Alex Ajinka for Reggie Jackson out of Detroit is one of the possibilities. So, and another interesting thing, I thought, you know, Detroit got rid of Caldwell Pope, KCP. You know, he ends up signing with the Lakers for 1 year. I thought he could have been a great fit down there in New Orleans.
Yeah, that's the one that I kind of expected. I mean, he would have been a great fit down there. They just don't, like you said, they've got the two of the best big men in the league on the same team and nobody to make teams spread their defense out. No one.
Right. Like, how good would Gordon Hayward be?
Awesome.
On that team.
Awesome.
Do you think if New Orleans was in the East that they could attract somebody?
And that's how sad it is right now, is all these teams in the East have a better chance just because the competition is what it is over there.
Yeah, I want New Orleans to be better, Matt, and I feel like they're still going to be, you know, fooling around for 11, 10, 11, 12
It's a shame, too, because every year we think they're going to be better. And, I mean, they made the big play to go out and get Boogie last year thinking they had a chance at the 8 seed. But now, yeah, it's going to be a bummer if we're seeing – you don't get to see Boogie and Brow even in the playoffs, which, like you said, in the East there might have been a chance for them to go get guys. But in the West, with the Warriors being up top and now with Houston loading up and – San Antonio always being good. Yeah, maybe players are detracted from even trying to go out that way.
Yeah, it's such a shame, though, because I feel like I want to see what New Orleans can do. I want to see Memphis, you know? Yeah. I want to see Memphis get better. They lose Zebo, which, that's unfortunate because I do feel like at least they could outgrind and outbig you. Wayne Selden Jr., another guy from the Summer League that has played really well, you know, running mate of Frank Mason there at Kansas, and he's looked good, could give some off-ball help to Mike Conley. I just feel like Mike Conley has so much that he has to do.
Yeah, and who else they're going to miss is Vince Carter. Mm-hmm. I know he's getting up there, but his veteran leadership had to be something important in that locker room.
Yeah, you know who they really miss? They miss Chandler Parsons being good, and they miss all that money that they're paying him to do nothing. Because in the ideal world, I mean, Chandler Parsons was the guy that was going to come in, and he was going to make Memphis better.
Right.
And Matt, he did not.
Oh, Clayton, it's funny. I was just going to say, this might be a stupid comment, but I think Chandler Parsons is going to have a good year this year. I mean, he hasn't been on the floor in 3 years, so, you know, that's obviously going to take away from some of the hype. But when he was on the floor, especially with Houston, and maybe he just had two great years, got a contract, and, you know, because nothing was really expected that much of him. But if he can stay on the floor with Mike Conley and with Gasol, and like you said, with Selden and a few of those guys, you know, at least they can contend in the West.
Yeah, I really want Memphis to do well. I was, as you all know, I've sort of, I've sort of renounced my Clippers fandom, and I'm sort of a bit of a free agent. And I'm kind of all in on Memphis. Except the one thing the Clippers did that irritated me, because now I really want to root for them again, is they got Milos Teodosic from Serbia. I love Teodosic. He's my guy. And if only he would bring Radulica with him, and then I would just be. I love Serbian basketball players. Yeah. So I'm sticking. I'm one more year.
Is Aaron going to renounce her jazz fandom?
Yeah, I haven't completely renounced it.
I don't know if I ever can. I think I have like a lifetime contract or something going on with this. When you grow up there, you know, the John Stockton, the Karl Malone, you try and stick it out through the good and the bad.
I grew up in a city without an NBA team. Closest one was the Cavs, and they were they weren't much when you go to that. So do a little Q&A. Remember, if you'd like to send us a question, just email us to submissions@joefanshow.com or tweet us at @joefanshow. Bobby in Henderson asks, will the Dolphins extend wide receiver Landry Jones before the season begins, or will they play the franchise tag game next year? #decisions.
Yeah, I mean, Jarvis Landry's good. He's one of those small receivers that you know, obviously makes plays. He's got good hands, great in the punt return game, but I don't think he's one of those guys that you're going to see them sink that much money into. I think they'll just continue to play the franchise tag game with him and see what else they can get out, because I think Devontae Parker is going to end up being their best wide receiver and the guy they're going to have to sink some money into in the future.
Yeah, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with these franchise tags. I like that guys have to stay where they're at, and those markets can really fall in love with them. But a guy like this where you're just playing with him,
yeah,
he's not going to get his money because you can just tag him.
Exactly. Just go ahead and tag him. Like I said, what if he gets hurt? So just, don't extend him. No need to. Wide receiver, easily the easiest position to replace. Terrence in North Las Vegas asks, I'm planning my vacation the week after Christmas and want to incorporate a college bowl game into my itinerary. Any suggestions? #bowlweek.
Well, I'm a homer, and I'm from Southern California. If you've never been to the Rose Bowl, you have to go at least once. Really, it's the granddaddy of them all, right?
I'm a location nut, so if you're going after, you got the Citrus in Orlando, but I think you should change your vacation to before, because the 22nd in the Bahamas and the 24th in Hawaii.
Right. Well, I would say if you're from here in Las Vegas, that means you've probably already been to Los Angeles. And if you've already been to Los Angeles, you know that there's no reason to ever go back. So completely skip the Rose Bowl, skip Pasadena, skip that terrible drive and the parking problems. I'm going to say go to America's most underrated city, and that is Nashville for the Franklin American Mortgage Music City Bowl. You're going to get an SEC team, Matt, versus ACC or Big Ten, maybe Notre Dame. So good matchup, good city, good music, good barbecue. What say you to Nashville?
You know, that's one of the cities that I've never been to that I always wish I have. All I've heard is good things, and have some friends that live down there. So one day I'll make it down there. You know what? Maybe this is the year that I choose to go to the bowl game down there. I think that's a great choice.
Yeah, fantastic. And while you're down there, call our college guy, Steve Clark, who we will hopefully be having back to talk a little college football with us this week. But, yeah, Bahamas Bowl looks good. The Hawaii Bowl looks good. The problem with the Hawaii Bowl is that nobody goes. It's like an empty stadium. It's almost like you don't want to go there. This has been the Joe Fan Show right here on NBC Sports Radio, 920 The Game. For Aaron Thorne, Jeff Klein, and Matt Reed, this has been Clayton Hamilton. Enjoy the games. TC Martin, the doctor, is next. Get it on.